This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Is seeing more severe weather and still not a whisper that it might be related to climate collapse. Partly sunny skies today for us here in Cascadia. Highs near 68 tomorrow, overcast, tonight, overcast, lows around 50. For tomorrow, look for partly sunny skies with a high near 74. And for Saturday night, lows around 52. Sunday, could still get some more showers. Highs near 68, not much in the way of wind. Sunday night, partly cloudy, lows around 50, bringing us full circle to Monday morning. We're going to leave it off for the alternative forecast. If anyone would like to hear it, I'll put that up on the KBOO website, because right now I'm very pleased to welcome our first guest of the day, Ray McGovern. Good morning, Ray, and thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with us.
You're most welcome.
Well, this, of course, is front and center on many people's minds today. It's Friday. There are going to be actions across the country and indeed across the world on behalf of Bradley Manning. There was, in past months, even a march in Kabul, Afghanistan. You, of course, would be the first person we want to think of, one of the first people anyway, when we talk about whistleblowers and the role that they play in current-day American society, and why that role is becoming riskier and riskier. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that this particular administration has got so much to hide? And, of course, we've just seen the fiasco with the Associated Press reporters. Can you give us, at least from your perspective, why you think the draconian measures are being pulled out to stop people from speaking truth to power?
Yeah. Well, the short answer is that they do it because they can. There is no check on them from our elected representatives in Congress. The judiciary is out to lunch. And so this administration, I regret to say, even more than the previous one, has played fast and loose with the Bill of Rights and the rest of the Constitution. So the First Amendment is no exception to that, of course. Now, with respect to Bradley Manning, this really is a moral issue. You know, he was 22 years old when he saw these young people being thrown in Iraqi prisons to be tortured. Why? Well, for writing a term paper critical of the Maliki government. Now, he also saw people being wrapped up on the streets. He was asked to cooperate on that. And then he had access to all these incredible cables and videos showing what kind of things we were doing there in Iraq. And this, mind you, is in the midst of the surge. Now, when he saw this photography, which has been called collateral murder, and aptly so, it was a real question for him as to what to do. He could have, as so many of us have done in the past, just sort of said, well, I promised not to reveal secret information, and, you know, I'll just keep my mouth shut. Well, his conscience wouldn't let him do that. And I have to say, I feel very, very close to this, and
I can imagine.
Because you know, 6 years older than he, 28, I was in a similar situation with respect to lies about Vietnam. I had the goods on them in black and white in a very, very important cable from Saigon, where the military said, we can't possibly abide by the accurate figures on enemy strength, because, quote, we have been projecting an image of success in this war, and there is no way, despite how many caveats we could put on this information, that the press would not draw a gloomy and erroneous conclusion, period, end quote. Now, had I take that cable down to the New York Times Bureau, I dare say this was August 20th, 1966, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I rationalize my decision not to do that by all the normal rationalizations, but I didn't do it, okay? And I didn't see at the time that a promise on a piece of paper, that's important. There's no gainsaying the importance of promises. But there are supervening values. That's the way the ethicists put it. There are values at stake when someone is trying to prevent violence or a war or a further bloodletting that supervene, that supersede this promise to keep classified information secret. And that's what Bradley Manning, at his age of 22, without the moral theology that I had studied at Fordham University, he was able to, his conscience not only piqued him, but his conscience drove him to do this very, very courageous thing.
And if the point, too, that I think that we as a nation need to remind ourselves of is what what was happening in that video of collateral murder. That is apparently completely legal. That is, in fact, the way that not anything that is contravening any laws. That is okay, and yet this is of course that went viral and it's all over the country, and thank God too that Bradley Manning revealed this, let this loose, people did see it and they were bestirred to speak out on his behalf, and yet the rape, the numbers, the staggering numbers of rapes that go on and daily in the military doesn't seem to draw the sort of outrage, that it being of course extremely illegal. So there is clearly something terribly wrong with our judiciary. Bradley Manning's attorney.
Let me just say a word about some of what you were saying here. You said it was completely legal. That's not quite the case. Although the Pentagon said that these soldiers firing from an Apache helicopter into a group of civilians, that this was according to the, quote, rules of engagement, end quote, there is no way that they can whitewash the war crime, being when a good Samaritan stopped to pick up a fellow who was... That's a war crime, pure and simple.
It is, yes. I did not mean to suggest in any way that the good Samaritan who stopped to try to help, which does make me want to ask you another question. When the U.S. launches drone strikes against villages in remote parts of like Waziristan, for example, and they hit the village and they say, well, the dead guys are the militants, and people run out to try to help their friends and neighbors and family members who are wounded or dead. And then the U.S. has this policy of double tap. Then they come back and they do it again to the people who are running to help. That has to be a war crime then, by the same token.
Yeah, but you have to, I'm saying this cynically here, you have to appreciate the president's predicament here. As he said in his speech just 1 week ago, I have taken an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. I don't believe it would be constitutional for a government to target and kill any U.S. citizen like Awlaki without due process. Now, he said that the day after the Attorney General admitted that this is precisely what happened in targeting and killing Awlaki, a person born in New Mexico, and there was no due process. So the president would make believe that, you know, it really tears him up. You know, I'm a constitutional lawyer, and to do these terrible things anyway, well, you know, I really feel really bad about it. But this is really, you know, pettifoggery. This is the worst kind of thing where he makes himself out to be somebody who feels this deeply but still has to do it. And I'm, you know, really scandalized by many of my progressive friends who are still willing to give the president some more slack. I am not.
It's absolutely astounding. And going in then to a weekend of action on behalf of Bradley Manning, I think that undoubtedly it'll be difficult to ignore the thousands of people in the streets demanding his release. Because really, if you think about it, this is all of our lives, all our freedoms are at stake here.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and he's starting his fourth year in captivity. Now, you know, that's there's something in the Bill of Rights about the right to a speedy trial, right? And the rest of us are trying to make the point that you can't do this to people like this, and all the more so when the president, the commander-in-chief, has already said, well, he violated the law, quote, end quote. He said that in California. Now, what military judge is going to rule dispassionately on a case where the president of the United States, the commander-in-chief, has already said, on the record, quote, he broke the law?
So, Ray, hang on a moment. We're completely out of time. That's something, and that's a good note to leave. Because it's something that we shall think about. Thank you very much for being with us. I cannot thank you enough. My guest, of course, has been Ray McGovern. He was a U.S. Army officer and CIA analyst for 30 years. Now works with Teleword, publishing arm of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington D.C. He's written extensively on this. He's a whistleblower himself, so definitely knows the territory. Thanks again for that, Ray. This has been Air Cascadia for May 31st, 2013. Sam Parrish engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. One quick correction that I need to make. The Resistance Ecology Conference is this weekend. And we'll put all the information on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/AirCascadia. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Today on Flashpoints, an in-depth interview with Middle East scholar Phil Espenes on the expanding war in Syria and the significance of Hezbollah's expanding role there. And radical environmentalists take action against genetically engineered trees at the International Biotechnology Conference taking place now in Asheville, North Carolina. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, the BBC is reporting at this hour that the Syrian army has scored major victories against the rebels and now holds the balance of power in the conflict. That, of course, according to the president of Syria, that's Bashar al-Assad. Meanwhile, Russia signaled earlier in the week that they would go ahead with sending S-300 missiles. And Hezbollah leaders have now vowed full support for the regime in Syria and the ruling government. And, President Assad told the Hezbollah-linked Al-Manar TV he was, quote, very confident about the victory of his forces and said that Russia is fulfilling its promises in terms of weapons contracts. Joining us to talk about the situation there now and the implications of Hezbollah's role now is Phil Espenes. Phil Espenes is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C., and author of many books related to this subject. Phyllis, welcome back to Flashpoints.
Great to be with you, Dennis.
Well, let's begin with an overview. How would you characterize the situation now? Where is this war, this civil war, is it? Regional war?
This is a civil war that actually is five separate wars being fought to the last Syrian. And only one of those five wars is actually the war between the Syrian regime and parts of the Syrian population who are challenging a very repressive regime. You have a sectarian war, you have a regional war for power, largely between Saudi Arabia and Iran, but with Turkey and Qatar on the one hand and Iraq and Syria on the other hand playing a role in that regional balance of power. You have the U.S. fighting Russia over naval bases and related issues. You have the longstanding U.S.-Israeli war against Iran. All of these wars are being fought out in Syria, with the Syrian people paying the huge price. So the notion that this is now just a civil war is not even the case any longer. It's already a regional and indeed a regional war with global interests. It's a very dangerous moment. The The possibility of negotiations in Geneva is the one slightly hopeful development, but that's looking very dicey at the moment. This is an initiative of the U.S. and Russia, who together have said they would each take responsibility for making sure that
And we are experiencing a slight technical difficulty with our flashpoints this morning. Please stay tuned and we will have flashpoints right back with you on KBOO Portland.
Whether they're even capable of doing that remains unclear. And right now, given that both sides are continuing to arm both sides, as we just heard, the Russians are continuing to send weapons to the Syrian government, including these new anti-aircraft missiles, missile defense systems. The Europeans have just voted to allow European countries, starting in July, to individually, if they choose, arm the Syrian rebels. The U.S. cheered that statement, although it says it's not doing it itself. The U.S. has 200 CIA agents in Jordan training opposition forces. So the continual shipping in of weapons is almost a guarantee that negotiations won't mean very much, because if the fighting continues, which it will, if the weapons continue, people can talk all they want in Geneva, but it's not going to change anything on the ground.
Now, the interim head of the Syrian National Coalition, that's George Sabra, said the conference